And so to prevent anything from happening that they feared happening, which again is that example that I talked about last time of fear and control, you know, they did just that. They had fear, and so therefore they sought to control this situation that they feared happening with the Hebrews, that never did happen, by the way, by imposing slavery on them. They enslaved them. And they used the Hebrews to build up their cities and build their buildings, but by the time of Moses' birth, they had been enslaved now for 400 years. But in spite of the bondage that the Hebrews were under, they continued to multiply as a people. And so the midwives were instructed to kill the male Hebrew children at birth, but the females were allowed to live. But the midwives were not killing the children as was instructed, and so the number of Hebrews continued to rise. So then Pharaoh commanded all the male children to be killed by throwing them into the Nile River. But there was one couple who couldn't bring themselves to do this with their son. And so they made a basket for him, and they put him in that basket and put that in the river. And it was there that basket was found by Pharaoh's daughter, who had Moses' mother come and nurse the child. And when he was at, you know, and then he was brought into Pharaoh's house and raised there. Which brings us to Exodus chapter 2, verse 10, which says, "The child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son." Acts chapter 7, verse 22. "Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds." Now, when he was around the age of 40, he thought that he would go visit the people of Israel. In Acts 7, it says, "his brethren." It says in Acts chapter 2, verse 11, "Now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up that he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors and saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that, and when he saw that there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. He went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, 'Why are you striking your companion?' But he said, 'Who are you? No, who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?' Then Moses was afraid and said, 'Surely the matter has become known.'" It says in Hebrews 11:24, "By faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward." So, upon all this, Pharaoh tries to kill Moses. But Moses leaves Egypt and goes to the land of Midian, where, upon arriving there, he sits down by a well that is there, and, Acts chapter 2, verse 16, "Now the priests of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. Then the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. When they came to Reuel, their father, he said, 'Why have you come back so soon today?' And he said, 'An Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds. And what is more, he even drew the water for us and watered the flock.' He said to his daughters, 'Where is he then? Why is it that you left that man behind? Invite him to have something to eat.' And Moses was willing to dwell with the man, and he gave his daughter Sephora to Moses." And they had two sons. So all of this sets things up for what's going to happen next. 40 years pass, and in this time, Pharaoh dies. And a new Pharaoh takes the throne. And all the while, the Hebrews are crying out for help in their place of bondage. And it says in Acts chapter 7, beginning with verse 30, it says, "After 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai in the flame of a burning thorn bush. When Moses saw it, he marveled at the sight, and as he approached it to look more closely, there came the voice of the Lord, 'I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob.' Moses shook with fear and would not venture to look. But the Lord said to him, 'Take off the sandals from your feet, for the place in which you are standing is holy ground. I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt, and have heard their groans, and I have come down to rescue them. Come now, and I will send you to Egypt. So he encounters God on the mountain, and God calls him to a task that God had been preparing him for all of his life, and that he was up until now unaware of. But Moses is concerned that the Hebrews won't believe that he is indeed sent from God to deliver them. So what happens? God empowers him. And this is where we read about where his walking stick becomes a snake. God tells him to put his hand, you know, into his shirt, and he takes it out and it's leprous, and he puts it back in and takes it back out and it's healed. And God does these things to build Moses' faith and also to prove to the Hebrews of God's call on him and to convince Pharaoh, of whom Moses represents, to add strength to his request to free the Hebrews. And God tells Moses what he's going to do when he sends him to Egypt. He tells him everything that's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. This is how Pharaoh's going to respond, and this is what you're going to do. He tells him everything. And Moses tries to talk God out of sending him, saying that he's not a good speaker. To which God says, hey, I made your mouth, and I'll go with you and give you what to say. Moses then says, God, can you please send somebody else? And God says, I'll send your brother Aaron with you, who's a good speaker. So Moses and Aaron leave for Egypt. And they do go, and they meet first with Israel's leaders. And he does the signs that God did with him on the mountain, and he tells them, you know, that God sent him. And it says in Exodus chapter 4, verse 29, then Moses and Aaron went and assembled all the elders of the sons of Israel, and Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses, and he then performed the signs in the sight of the people, so the people believed. Now, after this, we begin this series of encounters between Moses and Pharaoh. To where Moses makes his requests, he performs the signs, and at first Pharaoh is unimpressed. You know, his own magicians can mimic some of these things themselves. You know, what Moses does, the magicians can do them. And so his requests are denied, and not only is his request denied, the bondage of the Hebrews is intensified. So in this confrontation here, you know, Moses throws his staff down, it becomes a snake. The magicians throw their staffs down, they become snakes. But Moses' staff swallows up the staffs of the magicians. Also, the water gets turned to blood. The magicians do that. Swarms of frogs come up out of the Nile, and they get into everything. The magicians duplicate that. And so with these encounters and these demonstrations of power, like I said, the magicians are able to duplicate them, but what Moses does eventually will be something that they can't duplicate. At first they can, but eventually they won't be able to. And so with each of these confrontations, Moses' request is denied. Pharaoh is unimpressed, and this whole thing goes on. And so what would happen was, Moses would do something, Pharaoh would concede, and he would say, undo this thing that you're doing, and then he would, and then Pharaoh would change his mind. So, again, these demonstrations begin to intensify. The next thing that Moses does, he strikes the ground, and the dust becomes gnats and flies, and they get into everything, and they get on everyone. Then after that, there is the death of the Egyptian herds and livestock. Then there are sore boils that break out on the Egyptians. Then there is hail that comes down that kills Egyptians and their livestock, and it strikes and shatters the plant life. But it says that Pharaoh's heart remained hardened. And these things the magicians couldn't duplicate. They couldn't stop them. They couldn't do anything about them. And so, again, Pharaoh would come to Moses and say, okay, you know, you can do what you want. You can leave. You can take the people with you. You can go and worship to your God. You can do that. And then as soon as Moses undid it, Pharaoh's heart would harden, and he would say, no, you can't go. So then Moses would have to do another demonstration of power. So then the next one is the locusts came and they covered everything and they ate every plant that the hail did not destroy. Then an oppressive darkness came over the land that not only hindered people being able to see, but it was a darkness that you could actually feel. Now, one of the reasons why Moses was able to get away with doing all this, because again, every time he did one of these, at first Pharaoh would concede, but then once Moses undid it, he would change his mind and say, no, you can't go. And one of the reasons why Moses was able to go this far and not be sent out of town or killed was because he had been raised previously in Pharaoh's house. And so Moses was to be respected as an offspring of a former Pharaoh. It's kind of like today, you know, when someone is, achieves the office of president, even when that person is out of office, they're still respected, right? And they're still called Mr. President and all that kind of thing. It's that same kind of a thing. And so this was all part of God's setup, so that he could go and do these things and he would have to be respected so that he could do these things. So God saved him, God placed him, God brought him to himself, you know, and that's where he received his call from God. And God gives him everything that he needs to walk out the call that God has put on him. And then he sends him back into that place that he took him out of to do what he was called to do. Now, with these last few plagues, it is now God who hardened Pharaoh's heart. In the earlier ones, it says Pharaoh hardened his heart. But when we get to these latter ones, it says that God hardened his heart. And this raises the question of, well, why would God do that? You know, if God wants to free the Hebrews, why is he hardening Pharaoh's heart? It doesn't make any sense, right? Right? Right. Thank you. Exodus chapter 9, verse 14. For this time I will send all my plagues on you and your servants and your people so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For if by now I had put forth my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, you would then have been cut off from the earth. But indeed, for this reason, I have allowed you to remain in order to show you my power, in order to proclaim my name through all the earth. Still, you exalt yourself against my people by not letting them go. Not only that, but these were shared experiences. That as these plagues were hitting Egypt, and keep in mind, the people in Goshen, they were spared this. You know, God is raining these plagues down on the Egyptians, not on his own people. And so the people, even though they're not experiencing this, they're watching this. And so what's happening is, as they're watching Moses go and defend them, and as God is raining these things down on Egypt, and the people are seeing this, this is something that Moses and the people, this is an experience that they are going through together. As a result of this, you know, shared experiences tend to bond people. And as they see Moses doing these things, the respect for him is growing. And so what God is doing as he's doing this, he is preparing these people already before they've even left Egypt to be a people, to be a unified people. Exodus 11:3, and this is before the last plague. The Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Furthermore, the man Moses himself was greatly esteemed in the land of Egypt, both in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. Now, finally, the last plague is there's the death of the firstborn. And this was the one that does it. This is the one to where Israel is allowed to go. Not only are they allowed to go, they are told to leave. They're said, get out, go, because they're afraid they're all going to die. And so with this, Egypt is brought to his knees. Now, Egypt was a great power on the earth at this time. But But Egypt, you know, they worshipped other gods. Gods that didn't really exist, except in the minds of man. And here, the real God, the one true God, you know, has done these things on Egypt, and he has brought this major power in the world to its knees. So they're brought to their knees by the real God that they don't acknowledge and worship. And the thing about it is, what happened with Egypt, the news of it spread throughout the world. So that when Israel would head out from Egypt and make their trek through the wilderness and into the promised land, the people knew about them already. And they were afraid of them. So there was all these things that God was doing with what he did with Egypt went beyond just Egypt itself. He was doing things in the people. He was doing things in the land that they were going to be going into before they ever got there. So that when they saw the Hebrews coming, they were terrified. Like, for example, when they go to Jericho, you know, the city, everybody just, they just basically locked everything up and closed themselves in there. They were terrified because they had heard about everything that had happened. The other thing that happened when they left was that the Egyptians gave them all their wealth. They asked for it, they gave it to them. Yeah, here, take it, go, just don't let us die. And again, this was more of the provision. You know, what do you think they're going to build their tabernacle with when they're out in the wilderness? Plus, they're going to have, you know, all these things that they need for where they're going. You know, God was so good about providing everything and setting everything up with this. What God is doing is, he's building the future in the past before they've even stepped into it. But that's the goodness of God. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 27. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he entered as seeing him who is unseen. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. So, with the death of the firstborn, Israel leaves and heads for the Red Sea. The Egyptians realize after they've left that they have all of a sudden lost their slave labor force. They kind of have this moment, this aha moment to go, what did we do? What did we do in letting them go? Who's going to build our cities? Who's going to maintain everything? And so they go out after them. And so by the time they get to them now, Israel is boxed in. They have the Red Sea in front of them, and they've got the Egyptians coming up behind them. And God stations himself between the Egyptians and the Hebrews to where one can't get out the other. And while he's doing this, he's parting the Red Sea. And he opens it up for the Hebrews, and the Hebrews go across. And at a certain point, God allows the Egyptians to go out after them. And once the Egyptians are all out on the Red Sea, God brings the waters of the Red Sea back in on the Egyptians, wiping them all out. Now, the thing about this in reading this story is interesting, is because you're talking a large body of water. And so they weren't all totally across yet before the Egyptians came in. So God is bringing the waters in on the Egyptians. Once they all got in there, then he brings the waters in. But while the Hebrews were still trying, the last of them were trying to get across. And so he's like holding parts of it back still while he's bringing other parts in. I mean, it's just amazing to me the things that God can do. Exodus 14:30. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. When Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. And so the other reason that God did all this with Egypt was that, you know, again, like I said, that news of this would spread before them out into the world. People would be talking about this again, so that when Israel moved through the land and into the promised land, you know, people aren't going to want to mess with them. So with Egypt no longer a threat now, Israel heads out into the wilderness to reach the promised land. Acts chapter 7, verse 36. The man then led them out, performing wonders and signs in the land of Egypt, in the Red Sea, and in the wilderness for 40 years. Then this is the Moses who said to the sons of Israel, God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. This is the one who was in the congregation in the wilderness together with the angel who was speaking to him on Mount Sinai, and who was with our fathers, and he received living oracles to pass on to you. Our fathers are unwilling to be obedient to him, but repudiated him, and their hearts turned back to Egypt, saying to Aaron, make for us gods who will go before us, for this Moses who led us out of the land of Egypt, we did not know what happened to him. And so this last part here is referring to when Moses goes up on the mountain, and he's up on the mountain with God, you know, for 40 days. And while he's up there with God, the people are getting all worried, you know, what's happened to him. And they start to, you know, do things that are not very faithful. They get Aaron to make them a golden calf that they can worship, which, again, is out of the influences they had been under when they were in Egypt. You know, they start going back to the old ways. And so, as I said, you know, with all of this that has happened, you know, there was this respect for Moses, which he would need to lead the people. But the problem was that, you know, there were issues with, you know, that came with being slaves for as long as they were slaves. They had a mentality. They had a slavery mentality from being in a lifetime of slavery. You know, a lifetime that had been going on for hundreds of years. And so it wouldn't be long once they leave Egypt that the results of that influence, you know, being under that kind of a life, is going to surface when they're out in the wilderness. And so, you know, at the first sign of any kind of difficulty or any sign of anything that would suggest a problem to them in any way, they start to gripe and they complain, you know, at their first sign of hunger, their first sign of thirst. And in that moment, they forget everything that's happened. They forget everything that they've seen. They forget the miracles. They forget the plagues. They forget what God did with the Red Sea. They forget all of that. And as you read the story of Moses and the people in the wilderness, you see that this is something that repeats over and over again. They start complaining, they start griping, and they start to challenge Moses, and they start to challenge his authority. And they start to disrespect him. Even though there is this respect for him because of this slavery mentality. Now, we have been in a time much like what Israel went through. We have seen what we have known turned upside down and challenged and changed over the last 2 years. What we have known is gone. Our Red Sea, our Egypt, you know, has been the shutdown, the virus, the laws and the restrictions, the things that have been imposed on us, all of this to contain us, along with the fear that's in the world that is so prevalent right now. And this has served to separate us from the world that we know so that we cannot go back to the old way. Once Israel got out into that wilderness, they began to crave the things that they enjoyed in Egypt, forgetting their bondage. And so they wanted to go back to Egypt, even though they couldn't. And God has separated us from what was so that we can't go back. Because like Israel, we are to go forward into a new time, into a new season, unlike anything they or us has experienced before. I know all of most of you, if not all of you, know what an inheritance is, right? An inheritance is something that is left to an individual or individuals from a person who has passed away. Something built in the past from a previous generation is now being given to the present generation. Over 400 years of slavery was passed on from generation to generation. The children of Israel in Moses' time didn't build it. It was passed on to them. Actually, it was more like it was inflicted on them. And they had no choice on receiving it. It shaped them into who they had, in who they had become. Now, the wilderness journey was to shake all that off. To shake off what they had inherited so that they could claim what they were to inherit from God. But they couldn't step into the inheritance in front of them, hanging on to what they had inherited from before. And so the journey revealed and exposed the hearts and the minds of the Israelites, you know, as this time over the last few years has done to us. But all that we've been through has led to the time that we are just now coming into. And the time that we're coming into now is a time of rebuilding. So I want to take a minute and talk about that. And start to give us a little bit of a detailed picture of what some of rebuilding looks like. You know, using the example of Moses, but also talking about us. You know, because what we have now, we have inherited. You know, there are things that have been left to us by who was before us. Okay, in some cases, you know, there are the people that we worship with. I mean. Many of you that are here now were here before. There are those of us that were here that are not here anymore. You know, we have inherited our facilities. We have some of our ministries have been passed down. We inherited them from people that started them before us. You know, we have our history as a church, our experiences here, and we have its impact on us. Things that we do now, things that we embrace now, things that we feel that are important are things that started before. Some of you were here long enough to see these things come in. Some of you, you came in after that. And then COVID hit. And it started to change everything. Egypt and slavery and the Exodus was prophesied back with Abraham, hundreds of years prior. Okay? Genesis chapter 15, verse 13. God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions." This was, you know, what happened with them was prophesied long before. Hundreds of years before, with Abraham. But unlike them, what's happened over the last 2 years, we didn't see it coming. There actually were people that did get some prophetic words on it, but they didn't know what they meant. We didn't see our situation coming. But God made everything that we have. And just like God prepared Moses, God has been preparing us, just like he prepared them for their new season and has prepared us for ours. I've said it before, we were born for a time such as this. Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16. For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance. In your book were all written the days that were ordained for me when as yet there was not one of them. God knew before you were born that you were going to be sitting here right now in this time that the world is in. Now, as I said, through the Exodus and the plagues and the miracles and the experiences in the wilderness, God miraculously provided. He provided food for them, water for them, victories in battle, and this all served to build Moses in the eyes of the people, and God is demonstrated through all of these experiences to build the people's faith, and it's a faith for them, for where they were going, a faith to take the land, but it was also to separate them from where they had been for where they were going. Because again, you can't go into the future hanging on to some of those things from the past, especially if you're coming out of slavery. Exodus 14:31, when Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. But then again, as I said, you have this 400 years of conditioning that had happened with them. Exodus chapter 13. Now when Pharaoh had let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, even though it was near. For God said, the people might change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. Hence, God led the people around by the way of the wilderness to the Red Sea, and the sons of Israel went up in martial array from the land of Egypt. So in spite of all that they saw with Egypt and in the wilderness, they still rebelled. And so as a result of that, the first generation, the generation that actually came out of Egypt, the generation that actually saw these signs, that actually experienced these miracles, could not go into the land because they could not let go of the old ways and their old wants and their old desires. See, for us today, it's our old ministries. It's our old ways of doing things. Maybe it might even be our old leaders. Exodus 16, verse 1 says this. Then they set out from Elim. All the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt. The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill us, this whole assembly, with hunger." The wilderness experience was the next phase of Israel's rebuilding. But for that to happen, there had to be a divorcing of the old ways. See, before, their captors provided for them. Now, they would look to God and depend on him and trust the people that God had put there to lead them, not their taskmasters from Egypt. The old ways had to be torn down to build the new. So now we move, okay? We move to Exodus chapter 18. And in Exodus chapter 18, we see Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. And we also see here one example of rebuilding. And this is Moses with new leaders. So the building begins, or I should say the building goes to the next phase. Because you have that separating, and now you have some building going on. So it says in Exodus 18, beginning with verse 13, "And it came about the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from the morning until the evening. Now when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this thing that you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand about you from morning until evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. And when they make a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and make known the statutes of God and his laws. So Egypt had been replaced now by God's agent, by God and his agent. You know, and his agent was Moses. But this wasn't just about freeing the people. It was also about developing them as well. That's part of building, is developing. And so Moses had a need here. And Moses' need created the conditions to raise up new leaders. You know, Moses was, you know, keep in mind, you know, Moses didn't have it all together. Moses was also being developed while he led. He'd have come down from that mountain with it all together. You know, his experiences with Pharaoh, his leading the people was developing him as well while he was leading the people. Now they're in the wilderness. Now the next part of his lesson was, you can't and shouldn't do it all. If you share the load with other people, you grow other people. So Moses left Egypt with somewhere between, you know, the numbers are hard to nail down exactly, somewhere between over 5,000 people and 2.5 million. That's a lot of people. Either way, that's a lot of people. And so from what they had been, and these people, you know, from what they'd been through, what they'd been thrust into, with all these people, you're going to have issues, right? Yeah. Exodus chapter 18, verse 17. Moses' father-in-law said to him, this thing that you're doing isn't good. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me. I will give you counsel, and God be with you. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then teach them the statutes and the laws, and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, of tens. Let them judge the people at all times. Let it be that every major dispute they will bring to you, but every minor dispute they themselves will judge. So it will be easier for you to, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all these people also will go to their place in peace. So Jethro visits Moses. He brings Moses' two sons and wife to him, and he sees what Moses is doing. And it's too much for one man to do. Moses has become the man who carries the wisdom of God. And, you know, and the people at this point, they are accepting his counsel as God's counsel. And he's dealing with everything from common situations as well as all things religious and legal. And it's just too much. And he's not utilizing what God has given him. He's not utilizing the people. But utilizing the people will develop them. And so God uses Moses' father-in-law to speak to him. It says in Exodus 17:24. So Moses listened to his father, or Exodus 18:24. So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he said. Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. The difficult disputes they would bring to Moses, but every minor dispute they themselves would judge. So Moses here shares the load with the right people. He gave them authority and releases them to serve. He breaks this group down into manageable groups with these appointed people over them. And with the and with the issues that were more difficult, you know, they were the ones that Moses would deal with. So the old way dies in the wilderness, and a new way rises up in the wilderness. Slavery is gone. People are now being empowered. And they've come to embrace new leaders. And so in this time, Moses is also rising up new leaders. And this is not just for now, but this is for the journey that's in front of them. And this is also preparation for them when they go into the land and when they become a nation. Because a nation cannot be run by one, right? Right? Make sure. So COVID and what happened with it and during it has shaved back our numbers. Our ministries have been shaved down to the basics. What we have had and what has happened has trimmed away what was for what we are to do now. You know, we step into church and we step into ministries that are going on and we step into what already was. And as we step into those things, we grow and we learn and these kind of things. And many carry on from what has been done. And the way they were done. And so we have had what was. And now we've been separated from that. I mean, the way we are doing some things right now, we're not doing them the way we used to. And part of it is because there are things we just don't have. And it has forced us to do things in a different way. Because we're in a new season now. And it's a time of rebuilding. It's not a time of resurrection. It's a time of rebuilding. Building new from what was. And going through COVID separated us from that. It exposed us. It's like that example I gave last week about the purse being dumped upside down and everything that falls out is what God is showing us about us. And it's showing us what is there and Him working with us with that. And so it's something like what's going on with Moses and Israel and Egypt and the plagues in the wilderness. These experiences separate us from what was to what is ahead of us, to what was ahead of them. And like with them, we have all been through the shutdown. We have all been through, you know, the whole COVID 2-year experience. Okay? And lately, you know, in the last several weeks, you know, it hit right in here. But you know what? We all got through it. We all got through it. And what happens is these shared experiences pull us together. You know, they strengthen us as a family as we go through shared experiences. Whether they're good or bad, they're shared experiences. We were in a meeting this week, me and the leadership, and we started reminiscing about old times and people we knew. And you could just feel that bond just, you know, show itself that has been built over shared experiences that we all had. These kind of things, they build us. Things we went through together. Now, God has moved some people on. Some have been reassigned. You know, there's a place where God has them for the new season, and their season here is over, and it's a new season someplace else. But we together, like Israel, are stepping into a new time. We are stepping into a new land, and it's to build something new in a new time. I mean, you look at the characters in the Bible. Okay, you look at Abraham, you look at Isaac, you look at Jacob, you look at Joseph, Samuel, David. the disciples, the Apostle Paul. You look at these people, all these are stories of people on a journey, stepping from where they had been into their destinies and growing into who they would become to be. Building people is part of what God does. And we too are on a journey from spiritual birth to maturity. And God works with us individually, but he also puts others in our lives to help us along the way. They help us, and we impact them, because we are all on a journey. And this is one of the reasons why church is so important. Because here we are in a family. We're a family. Okay? And we impact the family, and guess what? The family impacts us. So you impact the family, you impact the family, you impact the family, you impact the family, and guess what? The family impacts you and you and you and you and you. Just like Jethro with Moses. And Moses, and now he's got these able men. You know, they're now going to work together. And we all work together. You know, you see it really in Sunday morning. You know, it takes a number of people to make this happen. I can't do it by myself. I need other people to help me. And so, you know, we do this on Sunday morning. And so on Sunday morning, you know, we have church, we have the sermon we're having right now, we have the Bible study, and in these things you have people that are presenting, but that you have the rest of the people that are listening. They're taking this in. And while they're taking this in, they're connecting with God, and they're looking at themselves, and they're evaluating, and they're deciding what they need to do about something. I mean, these kind of things are happening. And then after this, we move into worship, which is the other part of this. And in worship, we engage God in a different way. You know, now we're a little bit more expressive. It's not just one person doing it. We're all doing it together. And as we do this together, we connect with God. You know, we get more active. And our activity adds to the time. It adds to the experience as we all lift our voices in praise to Him. And we encounter God in a different way. And these are different ways that we encounter God. These are different ways that we experience Him. And these are different ways that we grow through this. But then there's also serving. There's the building of ministries in our, you know, in our house, which is another avenue for connection and encounter and growth with one another and with God. You know, we serve others, and it impacts us as we serve. Now, we currently, right now, as I said, we're scaled back from what we used to look like, right? But we do have some things going on. We have greeters. You know, they're out there working the COVID station out there. We have greeters. That's important. During the week, we have a food pantry ministry. Yeah. we have the worship. But for the service, we also have the sound ministry and the video ministry, because without that, nobody could hear me. People couldn't see us. You know, we have the Bible study right now. And by the way, right now we are wrapping up the book of Job. Next week we'll do chapter 41. There's only 42 chapters in the book of Job. So we're getting close to the end. Once we finish Job, we're going to do the book of Joshua. And then we're going to do Joshua and Judges and Samuel and Kings and all that. Because it's the story of Israel taking the land and building their nation. And it's for where we're going right now. We're in a time of building. And so therefore, guess what? We're going to look at Israel's story of building. And so I encourage you all to come for that. Because Fred and Pat do an awesome job. You know? And speaking of Fred, you know, with the worship, you know, this has been a new thing for him. And you know what? He's doing it. But if you've noticed, now he has people working with him. He has Tony, and he has Phyllis working with him. So Fred has not only stepped into a new thing in a new season, but Fred is also developing a team. More building going on. But again, that would not have happened if we hadn't had everything that's happened happen and we came back together and we didn't have a worship leader. And God put him in there. And it's stretching him and it's growing him and it's developing him. And as he does these things, I'm watching him change. I'm watching him grow. And it's exciting to watch that. See, if you want to get all that you can get out of church, it's more than just Sunday morning. It's more than just coming and sitting in a chair. If you want to get all that you can get out of it, you know, it's, you know, there's greater growth that comes from greater involvement. And so as we rebuild from what was, there are some of you that are involved right now. And there's some of you that are doing a lot. Now, there's some that may need to step into a little bit more. And there's some that may just need to step in initially. My question to ask you is this, is what are your gifts as you think about stepping in or stepping into more? What are your gifts? What are the gifts that God has given you? Because you all have something. God's given it to you. What is it? You know, what is God directing you to do? One of the conversations I have had with people over the years who want to get involved is they say, well, what do you want me to do? And you know what I say to them? What are your gifts and what is God leading you to do? What does he want to use in you while you're serving? How does he want to grow you as you serve? Maybe it's doing something out there in addition to what you're doing in here. See, it doesn't all have to be in here. Maybe God's got something for you to do out there in addition to what you do here. What is it for you in this new time? Again, like Moses, God has given us what we need. He's given us gifts and he has empowered us too for what he has called us to do. And how does he want to use you? You know, like it's like Moses. He will also grow you as you serve. And you'll serve with other people. And as he was born into his time to free slaves, so we have been born into this time to build. My question that I leave you with is, what does God want you to build? Let's pray. Father, I thank you for what you're doing. I thank you for what you've been doing. There are things that have gone on in our world that I know that you didn't cause them, but you're certainly using them. And you're using them for an awesome purpose. I thank you that you're a God that you prepare us for everything that is in front of us. I thank you that you're a God of purpose and planning, very careful planning, a God of great detail. God, and I just thank you that you've got a plan for each person. You've got a direction for each person. That as big and as vast and as powerful as you are so intimately acquainted with all of our ways. And you just specifically tool and design and work with and guide and do things with each and every one of us individually. Millions of people. You do that with as you maintain all of your created order at the same time. It's miraculous. But that's who you are. And we just give you glory. Father, I pray that you would show us what we're to be doing. And Father, I pray that you would help us to see also the things that we need to see to grow as you intend us to. Help us, Lord, to be good students. Help us to be good recipients. Give us the eyes and the ears to see and to learn and to grow and to be teachable. And I thank you for what you're doing. I give you glory for it all, God. Come have your way with us for your glory. And I just pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So let me ask you these questions that the people here have them on their chairs, but let me ask you out there in on Facebook land. First question is, what gifts has God given you? Second question is, what is God directing you to use what you have been given? What have you inherited from the past that needs to be put away? And what does this new season that we are in present for you in terms of opportunities for growth and service? So God bless you, and we will see you here next week.